Hey everybody, this is Sunday Gold. It has been a minute. Brett Nevidari and Masudi joining you here for a Florida State Baseball podcast. Everywhere that you get your favorite podcast, we've got it. Apple, Spotify, Google, and we're excited to be back with you as we are getting closer to the 2024 season. Fall ball wrapped up a little while ago. Brett, do want to apologize. It's been a busy fall here for both of us. I'm sure the fans have been waiting to hear about the Noles on the diamond, and we're going to go through a bunch of stuff here today.
Yeah, I think we also just kind of, obviously, a really good football season and a lot going on with that for both of us, and Aria doing soccer and basketball, among other things. So, yeah, just wanted to get through the football season first before we sat down and really recorded a full fall recap together. And then, obviously, what happened last week with college football playoff and stuff kind of, you know, decided to take it another week back. So, a lot to talk about today and catch up on with fall ball. Was there for all the fall, all the scrimmages, both the exhibitions that Florida State had, and obviously a lot of coaching staff changes, some new things around Hauser, and also obviously the schedule coming out for 2024 about a month ago now. So a lot of stuff to talk about today and catch you guys up on.
Yeah, Brett's doing a great job covering the football program, and we're going to stay away from football on this episode because it would take up the entire time, our thoughts on that and whatnot. So, been busy. Things are good, though, in our worlds. The broadcasting going well for me, and I'm just glad we can be able to talk about baseball yet again. Should be some optimism. Forgive me, I've been battling a cold here for the last couple of days. Feels like all of Tallahassee here the last couple of months has been carrying something and or is struggling to get healthy. But the show must go on. We can't wait, make you wait any longer. I made Brett wait long enough to talk about the Seminoles and Link Jarrett's year two for Florida State. Well, Brett, last year didn't go the way we wanted, but it felt like in the offseason, the summer, and into the fall, the Noles took some big steps forward as they got going. There are some new faces as well in charge of the Noles alongside Link Jarrett.
Yeah, obviously a lot of new faces in every phase of the program right now. Mike Capozzi being the new pitching coach from Dallas Baptist, Ty McGahee being the new recruiting coordinator from Pitt. We talked about both those hires in the summer after those went down. Of course, Brad Vanderglass, who was the volunteer coach last year, is now the third paid assistant. And also Sean Guyte kind of moved into Chip Baker's role. He held that same role at Notre Dame with Link, but was the director of player development last year for Florida State. So definitely a lot of new faces in the office, but Link still has some guys with him that obviously he had with him at Notre Dame. So and Ty McGahee, like we've mentioned before, is someone that they've worked together before. And Posey's a guy that is really familiar with Tallahassee, and from what I've seen is someone that just – gets himself into the fold and makes himself pretty comfortable and someone that can relate to players pretty quickly and get kind of right down to work and get in the groove of things. So, you know, I think obviously Ty and Brad, they do a lot of the recruiting stuff. So they were out on the trail as well during the fall, but things seem to go pretty smoothly with the staff, I think. And Link said as much in the couple times that we've talked to him this fall. You know, I think they're excited about trying to get things right after last year. I know Link that's been on his mind since the struggles started last season, is just how can we fix this? Where do we go from here? How do we get better soon? And how do we get better long term? So I think it's a roster with talent. You see that on draft boards and stuff like that. It's just now it's the coaching job staff to kind of fill in the pieces and figure out how to put that together. So. Yeah, it was certainly a busy fall for those guys, and I think that they've gelled pretty well together.
On the surface, you know, with all due respect to Chuck Restano and Rich Wallace, and we're excited for their new ventures, this feels like a better fit, this staff, for what Florida State wants to do going forward and where they want to go. It feels like at least early returns are very positive on what this group could become as coaches for Florida State.
Yeah, I think obviously Chuck and Wally and those guys were able to, you know, kind of get the jobs that they were looking to get for a long time. I think Wally, obviously, back home at UCF, somewhere he's always wanted to be. And Wally's someone that's respected out there in the recruiting world and I'm sure we'll do a good job at his homecoming spot there. And obviously Chuck up in at the Navy now, and that's something that he always was looking forward to do, I think, if it ever became an opportunity for him. But yeah, I think Micah being back in Tallahassee is something that he's always kind of dreamed about, something that he's kind of always thought about in the back of his mind. And I don't think it was something that, you know, he really thought would be an opportunity this quick until it came up right away this off season. So he's someone that is going to take full advantage of it, I think. Obviously, his father, Mike Posey, is the head coach at North Florida Christian, and he worked there as well. I think Posey is really comfortable here and someone that could be here for a while. But, you know, he is someone that's really smart, really good at his job, has results at DBU, was the assistant coach of the year in that conference, and is someone that's worked with pitching labs before at DBU, and something that is new at Florida State, something that we're going to talk about here soon. And then Ty is obviously, like we said, worked with Link at Auburn, has recruiting coordinator responsibility is at Pitt, so he's had ACC experience, and he's had some experience recruiting in this area because Mike Bell, who's head coach at Pitt, obviously was coached at Florida State, and is someone that likes to use the Florida area for recruiting despite being up in Pitt still. So McGahee has some connections down here as well, and has recruited in the Southeast, being at Mercer and Auburn. So lots of connections down here for those guys. And, you know, they're just all working together on growing connections, I think, in the recruiting world with McGahee, Vanderglass, Link, Posey, all kind of working and all a unit, one big unit of trying to get the program back to where it needs to be, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. How big of a deal do you think getting a pitching lab was for Florida State? What is the difference there, and why was it a priority for Link this offseason moving into year two?
Yeah, I think it was something that was really needed. I know it's something that obviously we've talked about off air before, just something that we would like to see implemented here, because it's something that you need now. It's just part of the development of you just need to get back certain metrics. You need to be able to see certain things with your pitchers, what they're doing. And it's not the most advanced pitching lab in the world. It's not the nicest pitching lab in the world, but it's a pitching lab and you needed it. And it's in the last batting cage of the batting cages that Florida State has down behind the bleachers in right field. It's kind of just, you know, they've got the mound in there. There's a TV right to the left of the mound. There's a edgetronic, I think is the word for it, camera that is set up right behind the pitcher that gets the release of the ball out of the pitcher's hand. And it really gives the pitchers quick and good feedback on how the ball is coming out of their hand. And, you know, Micah and other guys that work with the pitchers, and they're able to kind of show them exactly what they're thinking. And it's just, it gives you a lot of data. It's quick. It's efficient. You can make changes on the fly. And I think, you know, from being in there once this fall and just getting to take in how those guys use it, how they work, how they put it into the game, it's a really fun thing to watch. And I think it's something that, with Micah's experience of having it at Dallas Baptist as well, is really good for these pitchers to get that knowledge. And I think already in the fall, like, you would hear guys talking about after a pitching performance, like, I want to get in the lab and I want to see what it was like, why my pitches were doing this, why my pitches were doing that. So it's something that's really good for growth, and also just being able to know what's going wrong and what's going right for you in a certain time, and how you can either fix that or use it to your advantage. So I think it's something that will be a big boost for the pitching staff this fall. I mean, this season.
Yeah. I mean, you look at those SEC programs who were kind of on the cusp of it when it first came out, and they used it to their advantage with the resources that were allotted to them. But Wake Forest was a team that came to mind with Coach Walter of just taking advantage of something like that, and they overhauled their pitching in a couple of years, right? They had team ERAs in the fives and in the sixes not that long ago. And now you're talking about one of the best staffs in the country and the kind of arms that they could put in the MLB draft. So big deal. We've seen the effects of it. We've seen the benefits of it, and I'm glad Florida State's doing that kind of thing, because the talent that you can get to come to Florida State is already going to be pretty high just in the state of Florida and the Southeast. to be able to now hone some of those skills and get them to the next level, I think, can be really important. And you and I have talked about over the years with this pod, the development from year one to year two to year three. Hopefully this expedites that process. Maybe even mid-season, guys could get better a lot faster. But good for Florida State. Glad Link did that. And there's so much more, I think, that Link wants resources-wise to help Florida State compete in the modern day of college baseball. But that's a good transition point, Brett, into pitching for this group. Kind of recapping the fall for some of these arms. It was an injury-riddled pitching staff for a number of reasons, and you'll get into that. But this could be a starting rotation, too, that looks a whole lot different than what we saw last year. A lot of new guys, new faces competing for those three or four spots. And then the rest will shake out in the bullpen and the back end as well.
Yeah, and Link Jarrett talked about it a lot this fall. Whenever we could talk to him, that, you know, this pitching staff wasn't completely healthy this fall. It's not, didn't have all the pieces that it's going to have once we get to the regular season. Some guys that dealt with things coming into the fall, some guys that had sustained injuries in fall, and there's also just some guys that won't be available this year that are recovering from surgeries that they've had. So, you know, like a guy like Ben Barrett, Ryan Dennison, Andrew Armstrong, some returners that really didn't throw much this fall. But I think I expect all three of those guys to be good and ready to go for the upcoming season. Just didn't get to see much of where those guys are at right now. A couple freshmen that came in that are expected to be back in the preseason, I think, that weren't there at all this fall, Brady Lauk and Hudson Rowan. Lauk was somebody that I believe was coming off Tommy John. Hudson Rowan tore his ACL in the spring. He's a panhandle kid that I know some people that really like him. So those are two guys who get back. Mason McDougal, I believe, and Peyton Manca are both guys that are recovering from Tommy John as well that likely won't be available in the season. But yeah, so there's just up and down. There's some guys that could be back for you though in the season that we didn't get to see this fall. So we didn't get the full picture, I guess, but there's a lot of stuff here to work with, much more to work with than last season, I think, factoring the injuries in. You know, I think both the exhibitions that Florida State had, the arms performed well, and for the course of most of the fall, it was a pretty decent pitching out performance. Obviously, the coaching staff did a lot of work during the off season to get newcomers in here, to get transfers in here to help this staff, and that's really helped with the overall just stuff and talent on this staff, but obviously the depth as well, and also some freshman arms in there that might be able to help you early on. And so, you know, overall, I think it's obviously a much better staff. It would have been hard to be much worse than last year's results. Obviously, you know, just hopeful to have a much deeper and healthier staff once we get to the preseason.
Can you give me like five names right now that you feel like are going to factor in the starting rotation, weekend rotation race for FSU? Because it seems like we're narrowing it down to about five or six guys for those three spots, and then you'll have someone you can start in the midweeks as well.
Yeah, I think Cam Leiter, the UCF transfer, probably has to be the first name mentioned there. Coming out of the fall, feels like pretty heavy favorite to be the Friday guy. At this point, would probably be surprised if he wasn't the Friday guy. Cam had a pretty up and down season last year at UCF as a freshman, but the stuff is real. He really figured it out in the back half of the season. Cam's got really good stuff up and down the board. Fastball that will sit about 92, 94, but he can really reach back for 96, 97 when he wants it. But over the length of a season, I think he'll be more in that 92 to 94 range with good life through the zone. The off-speed stuff is very good. It's what you want in a starter. It's three separate off-speed pitches, slider, curveball, changeup. Every outing kind of seems to do some different stuff with the off-speed. There's times where the slider is that go-to. There's times where the curveball is that go-to. And the changeup is always mixed in there as well against left-handed hitters. So Cam can just do a lot of things. And the best thing from him this fall was just fastball command. He really commanded the zone with the fastball, which was which was good to see. That was kind of the one time I saw him in the summer on the Cape. That was my concern coming out of that outing. But this fall, there were really no outings where command was an issue with Cam, and he was the most consistent arm for all of fall. So I feel really good about where he's at coming out of it. And obviously he comes from a family of baseball, and I think he knows what it takes to be good on the mound. Connor Whitaker, obviously coming back for his third year at Florida State. And we know what Connor Whitaker is. To me, every time Connor has the ball in his hand on a weekend, I just know what I'm going to get. You're probably going to get anywhere from 5 to 8 innings, 2 to 4 runs, and that's good enough for me. That's exactly what I think you want in a weekend starter. But obviously I think they have such trust in Connor too, and Link puts such an emphasis on the bullpen that I could see Connor ending up in either spot. Last year, obviously he started in the bullpen with Wyatt, but then transitioned to the weekend after Wyatt went down once we got deeper into the season. And, almost every time that Connor took the ball, it felt like he was going 7-8 innings. And I think he did go at least 5 innings in all of his starts. So Connor's
can
stuff
I give
is,
you some numbers?
Yeah.
I mean, the last 3 starts, Brett, just to aid your thoughts there. Mercer, 8 innings, no runs allowed. Wake Forest, 7 2/3, 3 runs allowed. Louisville, 6 innings, 1 earned run allowed. I mean, you got to have a guy like that, right? Every college rotation needs to have one guy like that. And so for me, I think I agree with you. He's got to be in the rotation. Even though he can fill many roles, if you have 3 guys that can consistently do that for you, fine. If not, you got to have a veteran like that somewhere, whether it's Sundays, whatever. Every good rotation in the ACC and SEC specifically has one guy that can come in and get you into the 7th almost every weekend. I just think that would be a mistake by the staff if they don't put Connor Whitaker in the rotation. To me, it's just too valuable, and it's more valuable than using him anywhere in the bullpen or twice in a week.
Yeah, I think it would take other guys really stepping up and showing a starter's repertoire to move Connor ultimately out of the rotation. And I think the only reason that he would not be in the rotation is because of that trust I talked about, and just his ability to fill up the zone, his ability to induce weak contact, his ability to field his position. Those are things that you would also want in a late game reliever, that when the game's on the line, you're going to have someone out there that you trust. And I think that's just something that you have to figure out is do you want the 6 innings to get you to the back end where you might not trust people as much, or do you kind of piece it together the first few innings and then put the people you trust in the back end? But I think at the end of the day, you hope that you have enough of those guys that you can put them in their best spots that they can succeed. So it just depends, I guess, on what you get from other guys. But the other guys that will be in the mix, Jamie Arnold, obviously also coming back from last year. We saw Jamie do a bit of both, relieving and starting. I still would like to see Jamie get a third pitch involved a bit more to be a starter. But I'm a big fan of Jamie, always have been, was a big fan of him going into last year as a weekend starter to start the year. His command just wasn't what we think. Jamie is someone that's going to command the baseball when he's on. And he just, last year, earlier in the year, he seemed to not have that. I don't know exactly what it was, but I think Jamie's gotten a little bit better alignment down the hill now. He's got the slot up just a tick. I think Jamie's put on a little bit of weight, a little bit of strength. He's throwing a little bit harder. The slider is a little bit sharper. So if he could just get a third pitch to get people off those 2 pitches, I think. And I think that would just go a long way for him. I think someone else that will be in there is Gavin Adams. JUCO transfer, obviously was drafted with the first pick of the 11th round by the Nationals, but decided not to sign. Gavin's a flamethrower. He was up to 100 a couple times this fall. He'll sit in mostly the 96, 98, 99 range of this fastball. The fastball is susceptible sometimes to the barrel. Does kind of leak to the arm side a bit, but I think they're working on getting the shape of the fastball better to miss some more bats. But the off speed is really exciting when it's in the zone. The slider is low 90s slider, low 90s changeup. It's not stuff you see often. In his outing against Alabama, it was first 2 batters, it was some of the best off speed stuff I've seen out of any pitcher at Florida State in the 5 years I've been here. And when he's on with the off speed and when he's commanding the fastball, it's as good as it gets. It's just that consistency of commanding the fastball and the efficiency of what he can do. I think they would love for him to be a starter with his stuff and the ability to miss bats with the off speed, but it's just, will you be able to get enough fastball command to be efficient enough to be a starter and to be consistent enough to be a starter? Because I don't think you want to be in a spot again like last year where you just for so long struggled to get a 5-inning outing out of your weekend starters. So if Adams can give you that fastball command consistently, he would be another factor into the weekend, I think. I think same sort of story with Carson Dorsey. It's not the same velo fastball, but it's probably the best fastball quality on the staff, and he's going to be the guy that misses the most bats with fastballs from the left side. It's just so much ride and rise on his fastball. It's got that rise ball effect. It's guys just don't see it in the box. It just jumps on them even when it's 88, 89 sometimes in the low 90s. It's just when he's in the zone with his fastball on the top of the zone, it doesn't get touched. So there's a lot of different looks you can get from this staff. It's just who can be the consistent guys, who can consistently throw strikes, and who can consistently get outs and give you 5 innings. I think that's really what you're looking for. When you have depth on a staff like you should, I think you take the guys that are going to give you consistency on the weekend.
I think that's where I come back to with the Whitaker point I'm making, and I know you're in agreement on it. You have to get a guy like Adams or Tejada, I think, you know, Yoel Tejada, to take a step forward so that then you can move Whitaker into a more Swiss Army knife role. But if you don't have that, and last year I felt like the staff tried to do that with Crowell, and it kind of bit them in the backside, whereas I think you would have been better off just letting Crowell start from the beginning. But that's something we found out in hindsight. And mm-hmm. I hope you learn from that mistake and try and figure out a way to get Whitaker, who is, to me, he's one of your best three pitchers on the staff. I mean, you could argue he's your best overall pitcher. If stuff is excluded, right, from the conversation, pure stuff, you can make the argument that Whitaker is your best pitcher on that staff. I'll hear the argument for some of the other guys, because when you factor in, you know, pure stuff and the projectability, then that's a different ballgame and a different conversation we're having. It's not about pro prospects in college. You're trying to win games. Yeah. And I think Whitaker gives you that. So if an Adams can step up and a Tejada, and you got two guys, you know, who are throwing 96 to 99, and it's a dream scenario, right? Like, yeah. You have three guys when you add Leiter in. That looks like an SEC staff,
yeah.
Like a top-end SEC staff, where three guys come in, they're mid-90s to high-90s, it's plus-plus, and they all have big breaking balls that really do things.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then I think you need to have Whitaker in there. So the upside is really there for this staff, especially yeah. In the rotation. Like, there's a lot to dream about.
Yeah, because I think even more you talked after I talked, even Tejada was someone that I forgot to mention in that group of who could be starters. I think Ben Barrett, too. We didn't get to see him on the mound this fall as he worked his way back from injury, but that's always someone I've thought with his three-pitch mix could be a starter. Even Andrew Armstrong, I think, just, you know, I think back to 2021 with Jonas Scalaro. Obviously, he didn't start, or was that 2022, I guess? 2022, when he didn't start at all during the year and made that start at the end of the year, and you kind of looked back and thought maybe he could have started more games from us. But like you said, that's just another thing in hindsight. But with Andrew, I just could see him being someone that mixes pitches up and can get guys out with his four-pitch mix. He did some starting in the Cape. So there's a lot of names here that could start. I just think there's still a lot of figuring out to do. That roles is not something that Link really worries about in fall. He's mentioned that before. He just wants to see the guys go out there and compete, see how they handle competition, and see how they can execute in competition. I think now that the fall is over, that they'll start kind of more of that where do we want guys in roles sort of process. But I think they've done a good job of building, of getting a lot of different looks, a lot of variety on this staff, a lot of guys that can do different things. Connor Holtz is a left-handed guy in your bullpen that you're going to have that's going to spin the ball at an elite level, 3,000 plus RPM slider and curveball. That's just going to give left-handed hitters fits. Noah Short, the sidearmer from West Virginia, that reminds me, that gives me a lot of vibes of Paul Sewald for the Diamondbacks. Just that, like, with Short coming here, I thought this Short would be more of a sinker ball, get you a ground ball, get you double play type of reliever. Whereas I think his fastball kind of, it more so rises, it stays flat on its path and it doesn't sink as much. And coming from his slot where he's at, it kind of has that rise effect on hitters, where you kind of saw in the World Series a lot, where Phillies hit, or not in the World Series, but the championship series, where Phillies just kept swinging right under Sewald's fastball over and over again. Short kind of gives me that vibe. And he's someone that has, I think he was the appearance leader at West Virginia for a career. So you have experience there. You just have a lot of different things you can do. It's just where you end up putting guys in and how they end up executing in those roles, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to Armstrong, he really thrived in some of those long relief roles that he got. And I think he profiles better, much in the way that Jonah did, you know, and of being able to be a guy who goes 4 or 5 innings, and it's not going to be overpowering stuff, but he's going to move the ball inside and out. He's going to spin a breaking ball. And through the course of 2 or 3 times through the order, he's going to get you quality outs, right? And that Louisville start to me was phenomenal to end the year for Armstrong. And maybe that's something they look at, and that could be on the table for Florida State. You mentioned Jamie Arnold. He's someone who's always fascinated me because of the way the angle and the release point, it creates that extra life on the fastball. At least it feels like that to hitters. Really good slider that he spins in there as well. What are the chances that he develops a third pitch and is able to get into the rotation? Because I still feel like long-term, that's probably where Jamie profiles is as a starter. There's some really good stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie's been working on it. I know he has. I know he's been throwing it in pens ever since the summer. I think he was working on it up in the Cape, but just never got comfortable enough with it to start throwing it in games yet. I think he threw it a couple times in game during the fall, but never really consistently, while still trying to work on it in bullpens and stuff. And that's something that, like, you get in the pitching lab and maybe you figure something out there, but it's not easy to turn a changeup over from where Jamie's at on his slot. But it's something that I think is possible and something that would help him out and just give him another variety, another look. Instead of guys being able to kind of guess 50-50 between the fastball slider, if you were to move him to the rotation. But I think if he's in the bullpen, that fastball slider mix it's something a lot like, not the same exact type of stuff as Wyatt Coyle, but it's that same type of effect, I think, with the fastball slider mix. And Jamie obviously had a really strong summer up in the Cape. 2.79 ERA and 19 innings, 21 Ks. His outing at Alabama was probably the best, most consistent outing of either of the exhibitions for any of Florida State pitchers. I think he struck out 4 batters in 2 innings, and almost every single swing and miss that he produced was on the fastball, and just dominated Alabama hitters with the fastball. So that was really good to see. And, you know, just like you said, it's just a really intriguing profile and slot that Jamie presents.
Can I ask you this? Would there be possibilities of him adding a third pitch that isn't a changeup? I look in the MLB and there are guys there that don't have phenomenal changeups, right? And they're starters. Is there a cutter that he could go to that takes a little bit off of the fastball? I don't know. I mean, I know the slider is already similar in that it's moving away from a hitter. But maybe that's something they toy with. Or a two-seamer.
Yeah, well,
it changes, you know, a third pitch.
Yeah, I think part of it already is that he's working on multiple variations of the fastball. So it you'll see the 4-seam sometimes, and you'll see the 2-seam sometimes. The 2-seam was what Jamie added more so in the summer, and what he threw a lot in the summer. I felt like he threw more 4-seamers in the fall when he got back here and trying to attack up in the zone, and then would ride some 2-seamers off of that. So he does kind of already have that. You know, maybe he won't even need that changeup. You know, he can do it. But, yeah, I think no matter what, Jamie will have a pretty large role in this staff, especially if he's throwing strikes. And best thing Jamie does is just pound the fastball under right-handed hitters' hands, and that was something that Wyatt was good at too, just getting that fastball in on right-handed hitters. It can open up a lot of things for a left-handed pitcher. It really opens up that back foot slider to right-handed hitters. So as long as he's executing that pitch, Jamie can probably have success in a multitude of roles.
Yeah, I can't think of, like, I'm thinking of, like, the MLB and not really a bunch of lefties that I can think of as good examples, but, like, from your Red Sox guy and from his time with Boston.
I don't want to talk about the Red Sox.
We're not going to talk about the Red Sox, but Eovaldi and, like, Zach Wheeler, like, those are guys that don't – they're righties, so maybe my point here doesn't even matter. But, right, like, and both are power – you know, they're hard throwers, but they've been able to find ways to be successful without a changeup. So I don't know. Maybe I'm making no point.
Eovaldi. Did you say Eovaldi?
Eovaldi.
He is a splitter.
Does he?
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't
use best pitches.
Oh, well, then see what I said.
Wheeler, though. I'll give you Wheeler.
I feel like Eovaldi, it's like north-south power with a decent slider curve action going on.
With the splitter.
With the splitter. Okay, so then my point doesn't count.
But Wheeler, yes. There are, I think, Spencer Strider, I mean, fastball slider.
But he throws 100.
Yes. That's
different.
But if you're good enough at what you do with your two pitches, it can work. I just think over the course of a season, you have to think about how teams will adjust, how teams figure out your stuff, how your stuff holds up over a course of a season. Is the velocity going to be the same the whole season, or are you going to need something else to get you away with some dips in velocity over a full course of a season? So, but like I said, with that pitching lab, I think that Micah can really figure out a lot of things to do with these pitchers.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of my guy, Max Fried, right, with the Braves, and he has a changeup, but he doesn't really feature it. It's like fastball, curveball.
It's just having
slider.
Just having the presence of a changeup, of having that third thought in a hitter's mind.
They have to respect that it's possible.
That was something that I think this pitching staff overall didn't have last year, was that third. There just wasn't, outside of Connor Whitaker last year on last year's staff, there wasn't really many guys that even threw a changeup. I think Ben Barrett was a guy that did, but he didn't throw it a ton.
Does that surprise you?
No, I think, you know, some there's parts of this game that Lincoln and Chuck last year were very bought in on spin and trying to get hitters out with spin and throwing spin for strikes and throwing spins for swing and miss, and having one off speed pitch, one breaking ball that can really give hitters fits. I think, you know, when you don't have amazing breaking balls, you don't have amazing stuff, then it's hard to just have a 1-2 punch, but you know, there's a lot of different ways to do pitching successfully. So,
yeah, not to get too deep into the shop talk and all that, but we'll pretend that I didn't say anything about Eovaldi. I won't edit it out.
Good.
I'm not going to edit it out. But
you're not an Eovaldi expert. So
no, we'll just pretend like I never even mentioned it. Moving on to,
I'll just mention one more pitcher that we didn't get to. Freshman Matt Saucer is somebody that I really like, not only for the future, but also for this year. I think, you know, early on in the fall, it was somebody that I really liked projectability-wise, but as the fall went on, he just got better and better and was one of the most consistent pitchers on this staff when it came to filling up the zone and also missing bats. Saucer's mostly going to be low 90s with the fastball, some 89, 90 getting deeper into outings. But it's a quality fastball. It jumps on hitters, and I think there's a lot more in there with Matt as he adds strength to his frame. It's just a really easy operation. Everything flows well. There's a lot to like there. I really like the breaking ball as well. He can do multiple different things with it. He can throw it for strikes early in counts to both righties and lefties, and he can also expand out of the zone with the slider and get swings and misses for strikeouts. He also can toss in a changeup as well from time to time. So I think Saucer is someone that could get some innings from that freshman group that came in this year.
Yeah, that's always been the key for any team, right? Is there's always a freshman or two that step in and are ready to be able to take on a big workload and help a team out. So that'll be interesting to see. So you think Saucer's midweek likely candidate?
I think
to get some time there.
Yeah, I think he could be in that group. You know, I think it depends on what type of arm they want to put there on the midweek. If they want to go with one person on the midweek for the full year, there's obviously a lot of different philosophies surrounding the midweek. But yeah, I think he could be in that group. I think he's someone that could get right-handed hitters out of the bullpen. I think he's someone that could eat up innings out of the bullpen and maybe a bridge type opportunity. So a lot of different things he could do, but I think in the long term, he is someone that could get starter innings for you down the road in the future.
Hitting wise, I think it's a good time to start talking about the lineup. And it's a team that I think last year showed potential, had some injuries in there that made, you know, cohesiveness kind of difficult for that group. You were moving guys up and down the lineup, trying to figure out something that works. Brett, they started off so hot, you know, and first 10, 15 games of the year, tearing the cover off the ball. D'Almez goes down, changes the complexion of things after that TCU series. McGuire Holbrook never got going because of the multitude of injuries. And it felt like those were two guys that you were going to rely on. But then they had an uptick towards the end of the year. They started hitting better. Is there a correlation with D'Almez getting back in the lineup at leadoff? Probably, right? They're more likely than not that getting Ross back in there made a big difference. And he's poised to have a phenomenal sophomore year. But give us the cliff notes of this lineup this year, this order, and what areas you feel like they're definitely going to take a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious strength of this group and the thing that sticks out is the power, the ability to hit the long ball and the depth of power up and down the lineup. And even guys that might not be everyday starters, but guys that could platoon for you, guys that come off the bench in certain situations. Like, there's power everywhere. Your middle infielder is probably going to be two guys that were freshman team guys in their conference last year that both hit 15 plus home runs. Obviously, you have James Tibbs back, who you feel like is probably a 20 plus homer guy that has that capability. Jaime Ferrer, I expect to have a power outbreak. Cam Smith, I think, will have that power outbreak as well. Marco Dinges, who probably the biggest pleasant surprise of this fall, just his power, his ability to hit the long ball. You know, it's just up and down. There's guys in this lineup that have power, that have produced power at this level before, and guys that haven't done so yet that have that ability to do so. Even a guy like Max Williams, who may be on the outside looking in the outfield picture, but he's someone that has juice in his bat as well and can leave the yard just in an instant and change a game. So I think that will be the strength of this team and something that Link was really hoping to add after last year. Just didn't really have that presence up and down the lineup. Obviously, you had Tibbs, Jaime, and Cam still, but just outside of that, there wasn't much protection and there wasn't much instant impact. And I think that's what you're hoping to get from this year's lineup. You know, I think I do still have some questions of how this team will look defensively on a day-to-day basis and how this team will run the bases day-to-day. But, you know, having that power will give you the ability to make up for those mistakes more often just with one swing of the bat potentially driving in three runs. So, you know, I think there's some give and take with everything and the things that you're going to try to strive at. So adding that, all that power that they did, you're going to have to try to make up for some other areas where you're not going to be as great. So yeah, I think the strength is 100% the power. And the question is just how does the defense come along and how often are you getting the bat to the ball and how much swing and miss do you have? And are you hitting enough homers that the swing and miss won't matter? Are you hitting enough homers that the base running and other small things don't matter as much this year like they did last year? And, you know, when the offense really wasn't going, those things, they were really glaring and just really tough to watch at times.
I think last year I'm looking at these numbers and you had Tibbs who hit the 17 long balls and you had Cam who hit 12. But other than that, that was it for double digits. You would think this one's going to have more depth, right, guys? Could you have four, five, six guys that get into double digits on home runs this season?
Yeah, I think you could. I think You can 100% see the Tibbs, Jaime, Cam trio. I mean, I could see it from Dean. Just Lodice and Faro both did it last year. I think Cantu was, I want to say Cantu was around that range as well. McGuire Holbrook, I think, is someone that could be around that range as well, in the 10 area. So, I think Max Williams, if he was an everyday player, would probably be someone that would hit double-digit homers. I think it's going to be a team that is pretty high in the national rankings when it comes to homers. It's just, are you going to be able to do other things well, or are you going to be able to hit the homers well enough to be a good offense? I mean, I think it could be pretty similar to that 2021 offense. I think that it was with Matt Nelson, Robbie Martin, and Elijah Cabell, and the amount of homers that team hit kind of just, it was very boom or bust, but on the days and weekends that it was good, it looked really good. And on the weekends that you weren't hitting homers, it looked pretty bad. So, I think you just hope that you have enough power that it's not boom or bust, because when you have a lineup that could potentially be as deep as this one could be with talent and power, you shouldn't go on long droughts like you did this past year or in years past. Like, it's just, the drought of last year was just, it was just really rough to watch. And, I don't think that should be, it should not be the same way this year with the talent that's in this lineup.
Hopefully they can hit gap to gap a little bit better too, right? Like, the doubles were pretty low. I mean, you're just north of 100. I think some of the guys that kind of led you there, Tibbs had the 14. Jaime did a good job of, 22 doubles. Maybe some of those doubles turn into home runs for him this year. But outside of that, right, like Vincent and Carrion were the guys who were hitting doubles, and national leaders are usually in the 150 category on the year and up. Could we get to 125, 130 this year? I think that would be a good benchmark for FSU to kind of to get more doubles, because they're not putting guys in scoring position to then be able to drive them in. And so the pressure was there last year, it felt like, on having to rip multiple singles and try it and cut, skin the cat that way, so to speak. But it's got to get better offensively. I mean, 276, not an awful team average from a year ago, but then you look at OBP and slugging and things like that, and yeah, it could be a lot higher. You think this team can run the bases a little bit better? They didn't really threaten a whole lot on the base paths, and I know that's something Link in the past, at his other stops, his teams have been able to put pressure on you, whether that's stealing bases or taking the extra base first to third and whatnot.
Yeah, I think this team will probably do it a little bit more, but I think ultimately this will be a team that doesn't really want to run into outs, and they're going to try to get off as many swings as they can, because with the guys that they have in their lineup, the more swings, the better. And it's just a lineup that's built to impact the baseball, built to hit extra base hits and doubles, triples, home runs. That, like you said, with doubles, I mean, that's the stuff that I expect to go up this year. I expect the slugging percentage to go up. I don't know if the average will go up, but ultimately average doesn't matter. If the slugging and the OP and on-base percentage go up, that's ultimately what you want to see, and maybe the average will go up with that. But ultimately, I think this team is built to hit homers. That's what this offense is built to do. It's not going to be a running hit and run. I don't think that's what it's going to be. I think it's going to be, let's hit three run homers, and let's change games in an instant. Let's change games with one swing of the bat. And with that type of offense, you're really in every game until the game's over. So it will be interesting to watch. I think it will be much more fun to watch. I mean, Cam Smith is someone that could go first round. James Tibbs is someone that could go back end of the first round and a top three round guy. Jaime Ferreira is a top 5-10 round guy. It's just, all these guys, and there's talent up and down, and Alex Lodice and Drew Faro were coveted middle infielders by plenty of other teams, other Power 5 teams, SEC teams. Diamez Ross is someone that could be drafted this year as well as a sophomore draft eligible guy. Even a guy like Titan Kamaka was somebody that scouts asked me about this year. I believe he's draft eligible as too. Cal Fisher, who's freshman middle infielder, was the best player at the area code games last year. So there's talent here. There is talent. It's how do you ultimately put it together, and how does it ultimately coexist, and how does it ultimately execute? But there's stuff to work with here. It's there are no more excuses, I think, with the depth and what you have here to work with. This is a team that can do damage offensively, and I think they need to show that this year.
Am I wrong in thinking, too, that I'm just kind of looking through classes, and it seems like this team got a little bit older, too. You know, I mean, you've got guys now that are experienced, whether that's Tibbs and Fur getting 1 year older and are now veterans, or adding a guy like Cantu. It just kind of seems like there are more at-bats that have come into the program, guys who have been through some of these wars in college already at least once or twice through. That should hopefully, you know, in theory, benefit them through a course of 50-plus games in a season.
Yeah, and I think some of that's through the transfer work that you did, like Daniel Cantu and Noah Short. Those are guys that are grad transfers, and Cantu's presence kind of reminds me of the presence of Alex Terrell when he came in here in 22, where I don't think people realized quite the impact that Alex had in the locker room and what he meant to that team. But like his veteran leadership was just something that kept the locker room very steady, I think, and something that kept that group together and helped them get to the postseason. Like I think Cantu provides that type of presence for this team. And I think Noah Short kind of does too for the pitchers. And, you know, I think, like you said, Jaime and Tibbs, like those guys have been through it for 2 years. They've seen everything at this point. Even Cam Smith and Diamas Ross, they're sophomores, but they're old for their class, and they're both mature beyond their years when you talk to them. And you know, Cam obviously played a ton this past year between the summer and the full season, so he's got a ton of at bats in his back pocket at this point. And Rowe and Lodice were both guys that played a ton last year. It's not going to see a ton of true freshmen in the lineup this year. There's not going to be a ton of opportunity this year for true freshmen to get in there and get involved. But there's a lot of experience on this team at this point. It's still not a super old team with like fifth year and fourth year guys, but it's an experienced team at this point.
It's not Notre Dame that Link had towards the end.
You still have 28 underclassmen with the roster breakdown. But
how many everyday players would you say, though? It feels like the everyday players have taken a step forward in experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I think most of your lineup will be sophomores and up. All your lineup will be sophomores and up. But, I mean, first base likely be Cantu, who's a grad guy. I mean, Holbrook, and if Holbrook was the catcher, he's a fourth-year guy. I mean, Jaime and James, third-year guys, and then obviously a lot of your infield are second-year guys with Pharrell Lodice and Cam Smith, but those are all guys that played a full year last year and played a full summer. So everywhere you look in this lineup, there is experience of at-bats, and that's pretty different than last year for that roster. So, yeah, I think this is a lineup that was built to do damage. Like I said, it should be a good offense this year, I believe. I think it's going to produce, and we saw that against Mercer in the Mercer exhibition. They crushed the ball over the yard. I think they had five home runs in the last inning alone, or maybe four home runs in the last inning alone, and six or seven home runs in the first game. I think it's a team that will mash its way through midweeks, and a team that will offensively stay in every weekend series.
Some of the freshmen, if they do get at bats, who are the names that you think would get first cracks at some early opportunities?
I think Kyle Fisher, who I mentioned earlier, on the middle infield, also at third base. He's got it that can kind of play any of those positions. And I think Link called him one of the best freshman gamers he's ever been around. He started in the first game against Mercer. I believe that was because, you know, they kind of wanted to see both Lodice and Faroe at shortstop between the two games. So Cal started at second against Mercer, and then he started at shortstop in the second game against Alabama. And I think he hit third in the lineup in the second game against Alabama. And obviously I think he hit ninth in the first game against Mercer. He's someone that has just produced at a high level everywhere he's gone. I think he won the top player award at the area code games for his performance there. I think he had six home runs in this going and playing summer ball this year against other college baseball players. So he's someone that is pretty advanced for his age. Obviously there might not be a ton of opportunity there this year with Faroe and Lodice, but if either of those guys were to struggle early on, I think Fisher isn't someone that Link would be scared to throw in for early opportunities and early at-bats. The other one for me would be Andrew Duncan. He might be this team's best defensive outfielder already as a freshman. Really toolsy guy, just blazer in the outfield, can cover a ton of ground, has a pretty good arm out there as well. And when he makes contact, really impacts the baseball. It's just, getting used to college pitching, getting used to college breaking balls. But, Andrew did have a good performance at Alabama against some of their good arms, which was really good to see. And just expect him to play a really, really good center field when he's out there. So those are probably the two guys, I think, out of the freshman group that you would see this year. I think Brody Delamore, I'm going to get it right at some point if you're listening to this.
Is it Delamole?
Yeah, Lulu is definitely listening to this.
Delamalier.
And he's going to get on me. That's and text it. Me.
His
and,
brother played at JU,
yes.
right?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's his cousin.
Delamalier.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had to say that name a couple of times.
Recovering from a shoulder injury that he suffered his senior year, but he's another. I just really like his bat-to-ball skill. I think it might be tough for him this year to get in there just with the depth of this team offensively. But someone else that I really like the skill there.
I'm looking through some of your notes too from that Bama scrimmage, which was, if you want to go into that a little bit about what that day was like and what it was like being over there. Is it at the Sewell? Is it, what do they call their new park? It's pretty nice. They put a lot of money into it a couple of years back. And because the couple of questions I have of specifics were two transfers, right, from the Crimson Tide that came to Tallahassee with Max Williams and Gage West's brother, Jackson. Two guys who had to go back basically to where they would have been playing fall ball anyway. Both performed kind of well, though, in that game. Each had a couple of hits against their former team. Do they figure or factor into FSU this season at all?
Yeah, I think Jackson will certainly be in the catcher mix with McGuire Holbrook and Dean Gis. I think all three of those guys still have a chance to start at the position going into the year. And, you could see some sort of platoon situation there with Jackson being the left-handed bat and the other two being right-handed. McGuire obviously has the most experience here with being here last year, but went through a lot of injuries. Just every injury just piled up on each other throughout the year between fall and preseason and during the season. But he was completely healthy this fall, and I think it built up some confidence for Mac and started to perform better both at the plate and behind the plate. Jackson, obviously, I think, coming from Alabama, is originally a Tallahassee kid. I think he's comfortable in Tallahassee and is excited to be back here and has familiarity with the program. And there's some left-handed juice in his bat that could really play well with defense and right field. It's just getting used to this pitching staff. I think that's still the biggest battle that will be going on into the preseason and throughout with this lineup. And the most intriguing battle there. I don't know if any of them will be the everyday guy or if they'll try to go platoon, but I think coming out of the fall that Holbrook was the most consistent guy back there, and he did a really good job controlling the run game as well, throwing runners out, and just has a really accurate arm. So that was probably the biggest standout of the group, was just Holbrook's ability to control the run game. Max Williams, like I said, obviously you have a pretty crowded outfield here with Jaime, Tibbs, and Diamez all coming back from last year. Also, you have Jordan Williams as well, who I've always been a big fan of. And then Andrew Duncan, as I mentioned, the freshman with a couple other freshmen in the mix out there. But Max Williams presents a big power threat from the left side. He could be another guy that could be in a platoon-type situation. Didn't get a ton of at-bats at Alabama last year, so doesn't have a ton of in-game experience during the season or production, but he did have a pretty good summer up in the Northwoods League, and had some power production up there. And just something different about the way the ball comes off Max Williams' bat when he really gets it. It's just kind of like a slingshot effect. It just ball just jumps off his bat and he hits some balls out of the yard that get out and just what seems to be some of the fastest homers hit you've seen. But like I said, it's a crowded outfield situation, and I think some of that could just depend on platoon type situations, matchups, defense, how all that stuff comes together will be interesting. But I think Max will have a role here this upcoming season and down the road. I think he's a Jacksonville native, so another guy coming back into the state from Bama. But yeah, Max was one of the best players over there for that game. I think he had a couple pretty big hits in the second game to get FSU the split between the two six-inning games. But yeah, the stadium was pretty cool, Sewell Thomas Stadium. I think it's had some pretty big updates recently. Was a little nicer in person than the pictures I looked up before going there. But yeah, huge berm over in right field with a lot of room. There's a playground in left field. It's just a nice place. It reminded me a lot of Auburn, but a little more spacious and updated and a little bit nicer than Auburn was. Alabama's got a lot of really good pitching. That was a really good day of baseball, really well-played day of baseball. And Florida State, that was the best day of defense I thought I saw all fall, and that was probably my biggest positive from that day. Also, the way this team pitched was pretty well. First six innings were well pitched, just couldn't execute with two strikes, and that led to a couple home runs, which gave Alabama the game one win. But game two, FSU couldn't have really pitched any better, and that was really good to see. And it was really good to see the defense back them up that day. And that's something that if you could get that consistently, that would go a really long way in having some improvements this season.
Yeah, it was nice to see Florida State schedule some decent fall ball games, right? And that'll be one that, you know, I think they gain a lot out of. Playing an SEC team is important, especially a Bama team that last year made it to the Super Regionals. Wake took them down, I think.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
So
they have a ton of arms. It's like I was amazed with how many good arms they had rolling out there that day. It seems like almost every arm was 90 plus, a few guys in the mid 90s, and a lot of really good off speed stuff. I was pretty impressed with what their staff had going on that day.
Yeah, so I think that's also a good parlay into the schedule for the year. What are your thoughts on the schedule? Seems like ACC play will be loaded as it always is, but didn't take a ton of risks in the out of conference portion. Should be a lot of wins, at least on paper and speaking here in early December.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, no trip like last year to TCU, but we will be obviously there is that trip to Greenville for, I guess it's not really a tournament, but an invitational with Illinois, Michigan State, and Western Michigan. That was the most eye-opening, I think, of the non-conference schedule. There's no huge, three-game series with any one team. New Orleans is the final non-con weekend. Did think it was kind of interesting that Florida State gets their four non-con weekends right away. In the last couple of years, I think the fourth one had been coming late in the season. Usually, I think it had been on that week of finals, usually. But you get them all four right off the bat. So you could have a really, really good record if you take care of business early in the season going into ACC play. And you know, I don't think this team is going to start the year ranked, but you have an opportunity early in the year to rack up some wins and maybe become a ranked team going into ACC play. Butler, then Western Carolina, then the Greenville weekend, and then New Orleans. So nothing quite like that TCU series last year. But will be some interesting new faces that come into Hauser. And I think what we'll be looking forward to is the ACC schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the home ACC schedule, and you get Miami at home, you get Georgia Tech, Louisville, NC State. That should be some fun. Then you got Duke, Wake, Clemson on the road. I think Clemson's your first ACC series of the year, if I'm not mistaken, and that'll be a challenge, no doubt. You get Pitt and you get Boston College on the road, but you and I were talking about it before we hit the record button. Not an awful time of year to play either team, right? Like April, you get Boston College, and temps in April, you know, not as brutal as it would be in March or if you got them earlier in the season, and then Pitt is in May. Basically, by then, Pitt, you should be in the 60s or 70s temp-wise. So you caught a break, I think, in a couple of areas there. But it'll be interesting to go play Duke, right? Like back at the DBAP, I think, is where they're playing it this year, at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. And any other year, you'd be like, well, that's a preview for the ACC tournament if you get a chance. But Florida State, if they make it this year to the ACC tournament, it's in Charlotte. So you don't get that advantage of having played at that field a couple of times prior and getting used to it. So
you just it really hurt you. It just really hurt me for you to to hear you say, if we make the ACC tournament.
This team will make the ACC tournament.
It's just
confidently
tough to think about.
At the very
that
least.
We didn't, yeah, that this, they didn't right. make it last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, last year was a year of firsts in a lot of bad areas. But
this will, it will be a much different schedule than the last 2 years. I mean, the last 2 years, you were number 23 and number six in non-conference strength of schedule.
That ain't going to be the case this year.
I don't think it will be horrible, because you'll still get those in-state Florida midweek teams that, and obviously Florida is one of those, that you'll get to play three times that will help your strength of schedule. But, I mean, comparative to last year, you had FGCU, TCU, James Madison, and Mercer as your three non-conference weekends. The worst of those three RPIs was Mercer at 121, FGCU was 59, TCU was 15, and James Madison was 100. This year, last year, the teams that FSU plays this year, Butler was number 237, Western Carolina was number 201, Western Michigan was number 164, New Orleans number 94, Illinois number 96, and Michigan State number 70. So none of those teams are really going to help you out with your RPI and your strength schedule. So you need to take care of business on those weekends, because it's going to matter in the long run on your RPI and that stuff to get back into the NCAA tournament.
No doubt. I'm looking at I think we're back to Florida being the first game this year in the three-game set at Florida, I should say. So March 12th will be the first time these two teams meet. You'll play them at Florida in Gainesville. Then you get the game in Jacksonville at the end of March, and then you get Florida again at home in April. I believe, wasn't it switched last year, or had flip-flopped to Florida State had played the Gators last?
We played them.
True road game was the last of the three.
Yes, the first game last year was in Tallahassee, and the last game was in Gainesville.
Has that been 2 years in a row they've done that?
I don't know for sure, because the 1 year the Florida game was moved back. Okay. The one at Florida was moved back 1 year due to weather.
Okay, so that might be what I'm remembering. But overall, the schedule, I mean, at Wake could be some fun, especially there in late April.
There'll be some home runs hit that weekend.
No doubt. And then at Clemson, I think that's going to be a lot of fun too.
It is a tough ACC road schedule.
It is, definitely. We'll see what Georgia Tech is at the end of the year, right? I don't know what version of Tech we're getting, but that's former Noel James Ramsey comes back.
It feels like the first time in a while that the last weekend is at home. Usually feels like you're either at NC State or UNC over the last 3 or 4 years before ACC tournament.
That could be important, right? You could, like, depending on what's at stake in that final weekend, getting to play at home could be pretty important. But Brett, anything else you want to touch on? Maybe they did sign a new recruiting class quickly. Any two or three guys that are notable that you like a lot and maybe have chances of getting drafted and could come down to signing, or I should say the MLB signing day?
Yeah, FSU has pretty much a big three in the high school recruiting class of Hunter Carnes, Chase Mobley, and Miles Bailey, of guys that could be really elite guys if they get here, but also guys that can hear their names called in the draft. A couple other players in this class could also hear their names called in the draft, but I think Carnes, Mobley, and Bailey are kind of the main core of the class. Carnes is an elite hitting catcher, athletic catcher, could be someone that moves to the corner outfield in the future, but I think the team will draft him as a catcher. Had one of the best performances in Jupiter at the WWBA this year. I think he had three or four home runs that week, and it kind of cemented himself as one of the top prep bats in this class, and is someone that could be a first-round pick Chase Mobley is a right-handed pitcher from Plant City. Actually, I believe that he transferred from Plant City to Durant this year, but he's out of Plant City, where Parker Messick obviously was from. Lanky right-handed pitcher, dealt with some injuries the last couple of years, I think, but is healthy now and is kind of moving back up the boards of the rankings. Miles Bailey is a local product, power hitting left-handed hitter, plays both corners. I've seen also play shortstop a little bit here at Lincoln High School, but he's going to be a corner infielder, I believe. Bailey just has unlimited juice from the left-handed side. It might have the most juice of any bat in the high school class, and is someone that would do a ton of damage if he was to get to campus here. You know, I obviously a long way to go on all those guys and got to get through the high school season, but there will be a lot of scouts up in Tallahassee, I'm sure, to watch Miles this year, and he's someone that had a lot of eyes on him as well in Jupiter and stuff like that. So, you know, there's some high caliber players in this class. Florida State also has four JUCO commitments in the class. Carter McCauley and Bladen Plain are both physical bats that go to the same JUCO. Can't remember off the top of my head right now, but they also have a pair of arms in the class. Nick Greeny and Landon O'Donnell are both hard throwing right-handed pitchers, and then obviously you have three. In the high school class, you have three two-sport guys with B.J. Gibson, Cam Davis, and Camden Fryer, who I think are all early enrolling for football. I haven't totally figured out how that works yet for baseball, but I do not expect them to be on the 2024 roster. But those are guys that are also included in this recruiting class. So it's a decent class. I believe it's ranked 10 or 11 on Perfect Game, depending on how that's been updated recently. I think there's a mix of recruits from the old coaching staff, mix of some recruits from Wallace as well, and also some from Ty McGahee, the current recruiting coordinator. The three top guys in the class that I mentioned from high school are all Mike Metcalf recruits, and Mike Martin Jr. recruits. So those were guys that Florida State was able to keep over the last couple of years that committed a few years ago. There were some other guys in this class from that staff that did decommit, a few other top 100 guys. So, you know, it's a class that was ranked number one, I believe, when the old staff left and ended up being number 10 in the class. So still a top 10 class, but there used to be some more potential in there, but they're doing a good job with the JUCO commitments to fill some holes and add some more talent to this recruiting class.
I see a Noah Sheffield. Is that in relation to Gary?
Yeah, that is his son. Okay. One of his sons.
That's pretty cool.
He goes to Jesuit Tampa, middle infielder. One of the other guys that probably will get some draft consideration with Dylan Jordan, a right-handed pitcher, Matt Hogue, left-handed pitcher, and Adonis Velez, another middle infielder. Sheffield has a really good bat. Doesn't really have a defined position right now between short and second. I think he played a little bit of both at Jesuit this past year, with more second than short.
Same swing as his dad? Does he have the bat waggle?
Look it up right now. Yeah,
I will. Is it the carbon copy?
It's the exact same thing.
I love
thing.
It. And that would be cool to have Gary Sheffield coming through Hauser on the regular.
I think he was here for Noah's official visit, which I think was the Duke football weekend. Noah's also got a younger brother in the 2026 class, I believe, that is also a really decent baseball player who's, I believe, uncommitted right now.
Very nice.
But yeah, the swing is the bat waggle is the same exact thing. It's in the genes, I think.
Cool. Well, if it's any indication, then he's going to be a pretty good player as well in his own right. Brett, anything you want to talk about coming forward? I know you've got a pretty big interview with the head ball man.
Yeah,
for the Noles.
Going to get Link Tuesday next week. Kind of wrap up fall ball, you know, after they go through all of their 6 weeks of scrimmaging and exhibitions, they do some individual work like they do prior to those 6 weeks. So they do individual work before and after the 6 week period as the semester wraps up. So after this week wraps up with the semester ending, just going to catch up with Link to, you know, get his thoughts on fall, see where they're at right now, maybe get some updates on guys that were banged up this fall, And just see where they're at going into the 2024 season.
Very nice. I'm looking forward to that interview, genuinely. It should be fun to hear from Link and get his thoughts on where we're at as we get closer to 2024. Brett, good work, as always. He's on Knowles 24/7. You can find his work there. They do a great job. And we appreciate your listenership. We're on Apple Pods, on Spotify, Google, everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We won't talk to you. If we don't talk to you soon, you'll hear from that interview next week, of course, with Link. But happy holidays, happy new year, and we will hopefully talk to you in 2024 as we get geared up for a brand new season of Seminole baseball. For Brett Nevitt, I'm Mario Masudi, and this has been Sunday Golds.